Welcome to Torah Imecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rivka Kahan, and I'm excited to learn Sefer Bamidbar with you. Today we'll be learning Parshas Matos. In Parshas Matos, we learn of some of the final preparations of Bnei Yisrael for their entry into Eretz Yisrael, toward the end of their time in the Midbar. I'd like to explore together the story of the Bnei Gad and Reuven and Chatzi Shevet HaManasseh, who request to stay on the east side of the Yarden rather than settle the land with the rest of Bnei Yisrael. I think we'll see that this narrative holds a key to helping us understand some of the fundamental messages Moshe Rabbeinu intended to convey to the people toward the end of his life, and gives us a window into Moshe Rabbeinu's own experience as leader of Am Yisrael. The story begins with an explanation of the reason for the request. Umikne Rav haya livnei Reuven v'livnei Gad atzum ma'od, v'yiru et eretz Yazer v'eretz Gilad, v'hinei hamakom mikom mikne. The sons of Reuven and Gad had a very great amount of livestock, and they saw the land of Yazer and Gilad, and it was a place for livestock. These tribes, Menasseh enters only later in the story, approach Moshe and request this land in Eber HaYarden as their portion, explaining that it's because they need good pasture land for their livestock. Moshe's initial response is breathtaking in its vehemence. Vayomer Moshe livnei Gad v'livnei Reuven ha'acheicham yavo l'milchama v'atem teshvu po, v'lama taniyun et leiv bnei Yisrael me'avor el ha'aret asher natan lahem Hashem. Ko asu avotechem b'shalchi otam mikadesh barnea lirot et ha'aretz. Moshe said to Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, will your brothers go to war and you stay here? And why are you making Bnei Yisrael's heart waver from crossing to the land that Hashem has given them? This is exactly what your fathers did when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. He then goes on to describe at length the sin of the Meraglim and the punishment of wandering 40 years in the Midbar, and concludes his speech with a stinging, total condemnation. V'hine kamtem tachat avoteichem tarbut anashim chataim, lispot od al charon af Hashem el Yisrael. Ki teshuvun me'achara v'yasaf od lehanicho b'midbar v'shichatem l'chol ha'am hazeh. And now you have arisen in place of your fathers, a culture of sinners, to increase Hashem's anger against Yisrael. If you turn away from him, he will leave them in the wilderness, and you will destroy all this people. After this rebuke, Bnei Reuven and Gad again approach Moshe with a new proposal. They will leave their families and livestock in Eber HaYarden, and then they'll go to battle in Eretz Yisrael with the rest of Bnei Yisrael and see the battle through to the end before returning to their portion. Moshe accepts this, stipulating that if they go to battle before Hashem and help to conquer the land, then they will have fulfilled their duty and can return to Eber HaYarden. These psukim are incredibly rich, and we've skipped over much of their nuance, but what I'd like to focus on together is one simple question. Did the tribes really mean originally to abandon their brothers and just set up homes in Eber HaYarden without helping to conquer the land? It seems difficult to believe that they thought this would be acceptable to Moshe, and their instant willingness to change tax also indicates that maybe they always intended to help conquer the land. But if that's the case, then why does Moshe respond so forcefully and negatively and vehemently? Let's consider three different approaches to this fundamental question. The first approach, which is adopted by a number of Mefarshim, including Rashi, Akedat Yitzchak, Netziv, and Ralbag, focuses on the materialism that is manifest in the request of the tribes. They seem entirely focused on their livestock and wealth, even as Rashi notes, stating, Gidrot son nivne lemikneinu po v'arim letapenu. We'll build sheepfolds here for our livestock and cities for our children. They seemingly prioritize their sheep over their own children. In the view of these Mefarshim, the tribes really did intend to abandon their people, and it was only after Moshe's forceful response that they reconsidered and came up with an alternate plan. As the Ralbag says, Ulefi shiyada Moshe ki gavanatam hayta shelo yavru et hayarden leilachim emagayim asher sham, ka'as aleihem ma'od, v'amar lehem shesheilatam zot tani leiv ha'am me'yavor hayarden, uchvar haya ra'oi lehem lehishamer mizeh, ki mipnei tnu'at leiv Ha'am al-davar ha-meraglim netachru b'midbar ad tom kol hador hahu. And because Moshe knew that their intention was not to cross the Yarden to fight with the nations there, he became very angry at them and said that this request would weaken the resolve of the people to cross the Yarden, and they should have known to be careful of this eventuality, since the people's weakening of resolve by the Meraglim delayed them in the wilderness until that whole generation died out. The Ralbag continues, V'hine anu b'nei Gad u'b'nei Reuven ki hem yikhu etza shelo yaniu b'zeh lev ha'am. And the B'nai Gad and Reuven answered that they would take Moshe's advice not to make the people's heart falter. And that's why they came up with their alternate proposal of joining in battle first before settling down. According to this approach, the tribes really didn't mean to go in at first, and Moshe was justified in his vehemence. They were persuaded by Moshe's speech. This is an example of his effective leadership. In this view, we learn from the request of the tribes about the danger of being swayed from one's most central values and mission by the allure of wealth and security. Even though it seems inconceivable that the tribes actually thought Moshe would agree to such a plan, apparently they did, reflecting how we are able to convince ourselves of almost anything when we're really trying to preserve ourselves and our own interests. We also see in this story an example of Moshe's unwavering, inspiring leadership and vision in guiding people back to the right path throughout his whole life, reminding us of Moshe's courage and effectiveness as a leader, even after all that he has experienced with the people in Sefer Bamidbar. Now let's consider a second fascinating approach, suggested by the Malbim. The Malbim agrees that the tribes didn't intend to enter the land at first, but in his view, this was for understandable, even praiseworthy reasons. In the view of the Malbim, the tribes really thought it wasn't necessary for them to enter the land because they didn't view this battle as a typical Derech HaTeva type of war. In their eyes, Ein Tzarich L'Ezratam Ki Hashem Hika Et Ha'aretz V'Hu Halochim. There was no need for their help because Hashem struck the land and he waged the war. This approach makes sense when we think about this story in context. This is the generation that grew up on Hashem's apron strings, protected in the midbar, eating the man from heaven, wearing clothes that never wore out. To them, it was obvious that Hashem could do anything, that the conquest of the land would not rest in their hands. Why on earth would it be necessary for them to tag along if they weren't going to live there? Moshe's response is to remind them that even though it's true that Hashem doesn't need their help to conquer the land, their departure will likely be misinterpreted by the people around them. As the Malbim says, Halo b'ma shelo ta'avru et ha'yardin t'niun et lev b'nei Yisrael me'avor el ha'aretz, she'hem yachshvu she'atem nimneta milikanes el ha'aretz mipnei pachad yoshvei ha'aretz. If you don't cross the Yardin, you will make B'nai Yisrael's heart falter, so that they are also reluctant to enter the land, because they will think that you refrained from entering the land out of fear of its inhabitants. In other words, Moshe doesn't imply that they're actually necessary for the war effort. He focuses entirely on the psychological effect of their actions on other people and expresses himself passionately out of conviction that they should be aware of that potential given the aftermath of the story of the spies. If one reads the story as the Malbim does, it is meant to teach us a whole different set of ideas than the ones highlighted by Rashi and Ralbag and the other Mefarshim who agree with them. This is not at all a story about people who are blinded by self-interest and wealth. Adarabba, these are spiritually sensitive people who truly believe that everything is in Hashem's hands. Rather, it gives us insight into the generation that entered Eretz Yisrael and their mindset, how natural it was for them to rely on Hashem, and perhaps helps us better understand what comes next in Yoshua and Shoftim, where we see that indeed this generation was extremely confident about conquering the land, but less reliable when it came to the more practical, natural task of settling the land. The story also gives us deeper appreciation for Moshe as a powerful visionary leader who was able to inspire and teach people and to be guided both by unwavering faith in Hashem and also by a wise understanding of the needs of real people. I'd like to now consider one last approach in Mefarshim, which I think raises the most questions and leads to far-reaching answers. This is the approach of the Ramban. In the eyes of the Ramban, it simply isn't possible that the tribes really didn't intend to enter the land. In the words of the Ramban, V'hine Moshe chashad otam ki yomru kein mipachad anshei Eretz Kanan, she'amru behem hamaraglim lo nuchal la'alot alam ki chazaku mimenu, v'lachin amar lehem she'enam borchim ba'ashem kavotam, v'yasaf od la'anisham kehem l'hanicham b'midbar, v'lakach anu oto chalila shenira mehem, aval na'avor chalutim l'milchama, v'niya mehirim v'rishonim lifnei ha'am l'ilachim bo'evei Hashem ki lachmenu heim. The Ramban says, Moshe suspected them that they were saying this out of fear of the residents of Eretz Canaan. As the Meraglim had said, we can't go up to the people because they're stronger than we are. And therefore he said to them that they don't trust Hashem, just like their fathers didn't. and that Hashem would punish them by leaving them in the wilderness. And therefore they answered him and said, Chas v'chalila that we would fear them. Rather, we mean that we'll go armed to war and we'll be among the first of the people to fight the enemies of Hashem because they are our bread. We can consume them. In this view, of course, B'nai Gad and Reuven knew that they couldn't possibly abandon their people and that Moshe would never agree to such a thing. They didn't even consider it necessary to spell that out. It was so obvious to them. Moshe just misunderstood what they meant. So then they clarified and went into detail about their plan. This does seem a very compelling reading based on the pshat and on logic. It seems difficult to imagine that the tribes really thought they could get out of going to war. And their immediate offer to fight Lifnei B'nai Yisrael at the front lines seems to indicate that they really always intended to do that. But it makes us question if Moshe was justified in responding so vehemently, and even more so, what was the purpose of including this entire dialogue in the Torah if it was based on a simple misunderstanding? Perhaps one way of answering these questions and understanding this approach can be derived by a theory proposed by Rav Nati Helfgott in an article about this episode. Rav Helfgott develops an incredibly compelling reading of this entire episode based on noting that all of the actors in this story are firstborns who have been in some way passed over for leadership or for prominence. Reuven is the firstborn of Leah. Gad is the firstborn of Zilpah, representing Yaakov's concubines. And Menasheh is the firstborn of Yosef, who is elevated to tribe status, but is also made secondary to Ephraim in Yaakov's blessings. The theme of Bechira and Dechia, of firstborns being rejected and seceding from B'nai Yisrael, is of course a major theme of Sefer Bereishit. And this story brings that theme back into the narrative. In fact, the idea of separating because of wealth and livestock appears in several of the earlier stories of people choosing to secede from B'nai Yisrael. Lot separates from Abraham because of their livestock, as does Esav from Yaakov. This story of Reuven and Gad also harkens back to the story of the spies, as Moshe makes clear in his speech. In the story of the spies, Yehoshua and Kalev, who were from the tribes of Yehuda and Ephraim, two of the chosen firstborns, stood against the 10 other spies. Here again we see two people standing against 10, but this time it's two representatives of rejected firstborns who are standing against the rest of B'nai Yisrael. All of this background makes it seem to Moshe that the tribes are not merely seeking pasture land, but they're splitting from the covenant, as Lot and Esav did, and rejecting the land, as the spies did. This illuminates why he responds to their request with such passion and such a sense of urgency. If we apply this theory to the approach of the Ramban, it helps us understand why Moshe responds so vehemently, and why he may reasonably have misunderstood the request of the tribes. But I think we need to go deeper to understand the message of the story for us. If we go back to the story of the Meraglim, we see that Moshe was speechless in response to their negative report about the land. In Bamidbar Yudalid we read, Vatisa kol ha'eda vayinu et kolam v'yivku ha'am b'layla hahu. The whole congregation lifted their voices and cried on that night. Vayilonu al Moshe v'al Aaron kol b'nei Yisrael v'yamru elehem kol ha'eda lu matnu be'eretz Mitzrayim o b'midbar hazeh lu matnu. And all of B'nai Yisrael complained against Moshe and Aaron, and the whole congregation said, would that we had died in Eretz Mitzrayim, or in this wilderness, would that we had died. V'lama Hashem evi otanu el ha'aretz hazot linpol b'cherev nashenu v'tapenu yiyu lavaz, halo tov lanu shuv Mitzrayima? And why does Hashem bring us to this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken captive. Is it not better for us to return to Mitzrayim? Vayomru ish el achiv nitna rosh v'nashuva Mitzrayima. And each man said to his fellow, let's appoint ahead and return to Mitzrayim. Vayipol Moshe v'Aaron al pneihem lifnei kol kahal adat b'nei Yisrael. And Moshe and Aaron fell on their faces before all of the congregation of B'nai Yisrael. It seems that Moshe and Aaron are simply struck speechless in horror at how badly things have gone wrong, at how low B'nai Yisrael have fallen. I always imagine this as one of the saddest moments in Tanakh. Moshe sees the Meraglim approaching with their fruit, imagining that in a few moments the people will be as excited as he is by the bounty of Hashem in his promised land. And instead, he watches as the fruit turns into a symbol of all that they fear, as it becomes bizarre, mutant fruit in their eyes, instead of a symbol of Hashem's plenty. In that moment, it was all so crushingly awful that he is absolutely silent. Only later in the story of Reuven and God do we see the impact of that moment on Moshe Rabbeinu and what it meant to him at the time that the people he led were pushing away Hashem's covenant with both hands, as he expresses the response that was trapped inside him at the time of the Meraglim. There are many different ways of understanding this rich, enigmatic episode of the request of Reuven and God. To learn more about approaches in depth, please see the essay Petition of the 2.5 Tribes at alhatorah.org. And to see Rabbi Helfgott's article, please see the section called Resource Articles at alhatorah. We've seen a few approaches to understanding this story and its fundamental messages. The common element that they all share is an insight into the nature of Moshe Rabbeinu's leadership. According to the first two approaches, we learn about Moshe's capacity to inspire people, to help them understand the impact of their actions on others, and the importance of remaining committed to their deepest values. According to the last approach, this story gives us a window into Moshe's experience at Chet HaMeraglim and the incredible sacrifice and burden that Moshe shouldered as a human being and as a leader. Like so much of Sefer Bamidbar, this gives us a humbling and inspiring glimpse of Moshe Rabbeinu's Avodat Hashem and what it means to be someone about whom Hashem says, "Bechol Beiti Ne'aman Hu." Shabbat Shalom.